Yeah. Hi, my name's Julie, and I am an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink or a drug since May 26, 1988, and for that I'm truly grateful. We like to sell or get excited about recovery where we're from because, you know, it's kind of fun to be sober. So thank you so much, Tom, for volunteering me to be the speaker. And thank you, John. And thank you, everybody, for allowing me to come up and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I have to say it is a little, well, a lot humbling, I will say, because reading through that book, not just the names that I recognize, but this, all the people that came before us did what they did so that we could be here. And I am always and forever indebted to the many people who were very kind and patient with me when I came in, and probably still are. So I will tell you that we are from a town called Palmer, Alaska. It's 50 miles north of Anchorage. It's an old farming community, and there's two glaciers, two rivers, and it's surrounded by mountains. It's incredibly beautiful. Right now it's zero, so it's a little different than here. And so we've certainly been enjoying the weather. I did not get sober in Alaska, however. I got sober in Hawaii. But I'll start with why I think I am an alcoholic, or how I know I'm an alcoholic, I guess. When I was a little kid, I was a weird little kid. I was kind of, they probably would have put me on drugs nowadays, but I was just a wild little kid. My parents didn't really drink, but my grandparents did. And I remember going to my grandparents' house and the aunties and uncles all standing in the front room and kind of very Dean Martin-y, smoking with, you know, martinis. And it just, oh my God, it just looked so glamorous. And as a little kid, like there was something about that that I just knew I wanted. And about four, I asked my grandmother, and she gave me orange juice, and I knew that that's not what it was. Like, whatever, I was like, no, that's not what I, what I want what you have, right? And I knew that because something changed in them. There was a lot of tension in the house, and then everybody, you know, just started to relax and have fun, and I really liked that. And but I didn't get to drink right away. I grew up in a family where, like I said, the grandparents drank, but my parents really did not drink. And I think that my dad might be, might have been an alcoholic, but he didn't drink, probably for that reason. When I was about 12, my family went on a fantastic family vacation. And I had, you know, a really good upbringing. They loved me very much. But I'm kind of this kid who I just can't get settled. And I'm kind of vacillating between being the president of everything. And I was the president of the 4-H Club, the Spanish Club. I was the valedictorian speaker. I mean, I'm like the president of everything. Or I'm getting suspended for telling the teachers off and the principals how to principal. And I mean, I had letters written about why teachers should be fired. And I mean, I was just like just going, right? Just going. And so when we went on this vacation, and my older sister, who is a member of our other program, our sister program, Al-Anon, said, let's have a cocktail. And my parents had gone off with the rich aunties. They were in L.A., and they went off to have dinner. And my sister had a glass of wine and fell asleep in front of the television. And I went back into the kitchen and said, I need some ice. And I need, you know, to get a hot dog. And I just kept going back into the kitchen and climbing up on the counter and pouring a real drink. And, you know, I got horribly drunk. I threw up in every room of my rich aunt's house. They came home and they couldn't find me. I was curled up underneath the, like, covers at the end of the bed. My sister at this time, kind of like a little canary, right? I mean, everything looks really good on the outside, but something's going on in the house. And so my sister had been kind of dabbling in being bad. And so my mom was sure she had done something to me that made me this way. And when they found me, my mom said, what are you on? And I had heard that when you have your period, you sometimes feel a little sick. So I said I was having my period. And and they didn't believe me. So, you know, so my punishment for that was that I, you know, was going to be hung over on this flight to the Caribbean, right, to Eastern Airlines, 8-hour flight, and it was just awful. And I, you know, I remember we went on this beautiful trip, and I just remember very clearly thinking that I am not going to ever drink again. And I read this book while I was on the trip about this guy who got in trouble for drugs and ended up in a Thai jail, and I was like, okay, and I'm not going to do drugs. And boys are probably a bad too. So I'm just going to just go right into the straight and narrow. I'm going to be good. But what I was on that trip, my parents bought this stuff called Saba Spice. It was spiced rum. And they brought it home, and it just looked delicious. I mean, I can't tell you anything. It was just, you know, calling my name. And we had this liquor cabinet that was up above the refrigerator that nobody ever touched until the aunties and uncles came. And, you know, it just called my name. And I would invite my friends over, and I would, you know, mix. I was a mixologist, so I'd mix everything together. And if you were the kind of friend who said, oh, that's terrible, I don't want that, I don't like that way it makes me feel, then you were done being my friend. And I just, you know, started moving towards my people, right? I just kind of started moving towards the people who were going to drink the way I wanted to drink. And, you know, I didn't get to drink all the time, but I immediately drank alcoholically. I immediately lied about my drinking, and I, you know, intuitively knew to do that, right? So when I was 15, I kind of looked around, and all of my friends were dying or dropping out or getting pregnant. You know what I mean? It was like stuff was happening. And I was at a party where stuff was happening, and some, you know, bad stuff was going down. And I just remember consciously thinking, I got to do something different, right? I didn't know that I could stop drinking, right? It never occurred to me that I could stop drinking and smoking. I mean, I used to steal my neighbor's weed, and, you know, so I loved all kinds of things like that. But I had this moment of clarity, and I looked around, and I found myself a man. He was 6 years older than me, and he was a surfer, and I sort of attached myself to him, and, you know, off we went. And so for 9 years, he watched my back. Like, I grew up in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California, so we would go down to Santa Cruz and go to beach parties and keggers and all kinds of stuff, and he was relatively straight. Me and Aqualung would hold him down and blow smoke at his face, but he was relatively straight and pull me out of, you know, situations that were like, you know, beer bottles. Well, I'm sure you guys have those here too, right? The keggers that go a little south. Anyways, he would pull me out of those situations, I just kept having fun. I was having the time of my life. And when I was 16, my mom had kind of, my family sort of imploded. My mom, you know, just kind of went off the deep end. And I decided that I was an adult now. And, you know, one thing led to another, and 5 CHPs came and removed me from my family home. And I had stolen some jewelry. I had done a bunch of stuff, but I told them it was her, and they believed me. And, you know, I've been lying to men my whole life, so it was, you know, pretty easy to do. They dropped me off at my boyfriend's house, and, you know, I was off and running. And shortly thereafter, I moved in with him and a bunch of other adult people. And I'm living in Los Gatos, California, and I'm going to high school. I became an emancipated minor because that's what you do, right? You're not running your own. Like, in fact, when I moved out of the family home, I played that song, "You Can't Even Run Your Own Life, I'll Be Damned If You'll Run Mine," really loud. So it's like kind of like, anyways, I was really kind and loving back then. But anyways, I was living in this apartment with a bunch of people, and, you know, and I'm doing the same thing. Like, he's making me do my homework before I get high, you know. But I'm in the front of the class with my hand in the air, being the smart, you know, valedictorian girl that I can be. And then I'm going home to my apartment, and we're, you know, it is on every night, and, you know, it's crazy. And in fact, I had a big party where people showed up, and they were like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "It's my house." You know what I mean? I was just like, you know, because I'm just such a, I'm who you want me to be, right? Or who I think you want me to be. And so I'm just kind of like, I went from, you know, a cowgirl. I realized the other day that I gave up my horse. I had a horse when I was a kid. I gave up my horse for booze and a boy. Like, that is so sad. I mean, now that I think about it, that was so sad. But I gave up a lot of stuff for booze and boys. And, you know, I kind of thought it was their fault, but I just kept doing it because it just seemed like a good time. You know, about that time we moved to Hawaii because he was a surfer. I said that. So we moved to Hawaii because that's what you do if you're a surfer. And at one point I'm living in a house. We called it the Roach Motel for two reasons. One, there were big green leafy plants growing out back. And then two, it was in the Kaneohe Hills, and when it would rain, the cockroaches, and they're the big flying kind, would come in. because they don't like the rain either. And we had giant garbage cans, industrial-sized garbage cans filled with beer cans, and the cockroaches would get go in there because cockroaches like beer too. If you know that, they'd get stuck in there, and the cans would kind of the whole can thing would shake and would move and stuff. And you know, I just thought, man, this is the life. You know what I mean? Like, we're breaking up furniture for bonfires, and it is fun. And my mom and my sister came to visit us, and my mom was horrified. And she said, you know, like, come back and be a kid. Like, she begged me. And I did what I normally do. I cranked up Led Zeppelin, and I put two giant speakers between my ears, and I said, like, did you see the view? Like, that's why I'm here. Like, I'm having fun. Go away. I, you know, moved away so that I could live that life, and, you know, I just wanted to keep living that life. I didn't see the problem. I saw the look on my mom's face, so I knew there was something wrong, and I pretty much thought it was her, right? And then because she had sort of started to, she had started to get some recovery. She also started in Al-Anon and AA, but she had started to put some little bees in my bonnet, and I thought it was him. I mean, it's him. He's the problem, right? If it wasn't for him, everything would be okay. And so I would periodically leave him, and usually in these big, you know, like, ah, I'm leaving, and I'd get to the airport and then throw down my bags and be like, ah, I'm not leaving, and, you know, stuff like that. And he would just say, okay, like, I'm doing it again, right? Okay. And then one time I said, I'm leaving, and I actually left, and I went to California. I came to California from Hawaii. And my mom said, well, I'm going to an Al-Anon meeting. You could sit in the car or you can come in. And because she thought for sure it was him, right? He's the problem. It can't be her, you know, angel child daughter. That's the problem. But I went in there, and I don't know what they said. I don't know. I think I got one of the pamphlets at the 44 questions, you might be an alcoholic if, and I, you know, I kind of leafed through it and was kind of like, I mean, that's a good time. I don't know what you're, you know, I saw it. I remember seeing it, but not really it registering. I'm 19 at the time, and she asked me, what do you think? And I said, I think they're talking about me, and we didn't talk about it again. Like, that was the end of the conversation. My solution was that I would go fight forest fires in Humboldt, California. So I joined the Conservation Corps. I went through training. During training, you cannot drink or do or have sex or smoke. Or I mean, there was a bunch of rules, right? And so I'm either a rule follower or I'm not, so I'm going to follow the rules. And if I don't have anything, I vibrate. I mean, I am like a cat on a hot tin roof. So I'm like winning all the awards, right? I can climb faster, you know, like I'm just like spun, which is a good thing, I guess, if you're gonna send somebody into a fire, but not so good for like having a spiritual awakening. So anyways, I'm just crazy. I go up to Humboldt. I have not drank or done anything. No boys, no nothing for 2 weeks. And I get there. I mean, that is a miracle. I don't know about you guys, but that is like practically sainthood. But anyways, so I get there and I get off the bus and I just remember this, like I look around and I see my people. You know what I mean? Like we're everywhere. And that night I'm down, you can't drink on state property. So we're down at the bottom of the hill, above a river. I'm sucking on a keg. I'm in the river. I'm waking up half naked and everybody's pissed because I did it again, right? You know what I mean? And it's like, I'm in the middle of nowhere and I'm just like right back at it. Like it is just happening once again. And because I'm so kind of spun and wired, I'm the Sawyer, which means that I, or the Swamper, excuse me. I go into the fire second. I carry 30 pounds of gasoline on my back. And it is like, because I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. I mean, before all of that, the boyfriend was working for the Navy, and I, you know, they were training dolphins, working with Navy SEALs, and Navy SEALs are, any Navy SEALs here? A lot of fun. Anyway, so fun was like kind of getting like really high. We were jumping off cliffs, and you know what I mean? Like it was like, so I'm here, and I need something to feel, you know what I mean? And I'm doing things. There's some things that I did that I'm, you know, horribly ashamed of that I kind of wake up from, like, what are you doing here? You know what I mean? Like I just, the decent people are pissed. You know what I mean? I just can't figure it out. And then it rains. So I'm out because it's no longer fun. You know what I mean? I'm not going to stick around if it's not a good time. My motto was like all good all the time. Like if it's fun, I'm here. And if it's not, I'm out. And so it started to rain. A lot of things happened on the way home that were really exciting. Anyways, I go back to Hawaii. And I now, like the pit in my gut, right? The pit is huge. Like I tried leaving. I tried being, you know, somebody else. I tried all these things and it is not going away. You know what I mean? It's clearly not his fault anymore. It is definitely on me. And about that time, some ladies come to my work. I'm working in a restaurant and these ladies are there. And one of them is, well, she's fat and old. And so I don't like have anything. She's like, I don't want anything that you have. But the other lady was kind of younger and had a little bit of an attitude problem. And I watched them work together and something changed in the lady with the attitude problem. Like I saw something in her that changed and I was like, what is going on here? And the lady, this is really how shallow I can be. The lady who is fat and old had this necklace, right? It's a circle and a triangle. And I was like, that is so cool. How do you get that necklace? So the reason I came to AA for the necklace, for the jewelry, was good enough reason. They told me, you know, they started doing the traditional 12-step stuff, right? Just feeding me little, you know. And here's the thing. I am a master at disguise. So people are saying to me like, oh, my, how are you so happy all the time? Like, you're just such a joy. And I've got the mask out here big time. And that lady, because I'm going to swear, she said she looked behind the mask. She could see behind, which we don't like that when you could see behind the mask. But she saw behind the mask. And she said to me one day, you feel like shit, don't you? And I was like, oh, how do you know? Like, how do you know this stuff? So I'm interested. Right? I'm kind of paying attention. And they tell me, you know, there's a meeting right across the street from your house. Now, at this point, this is what my drinking is looking like. Now, again, he's watching my back, so I'm not having a lot of consequences. I do not drive. I have ridden my horse drunk. You know, where you put the reins over the horse and it just takes you home. I've ridden my bike drunk a lot. I've drunk, stumbled to the store a lot. I would go... we lived on the beach, and I would go to the little restaurant, the little store, you know, the little 7-Eleven type store, and I'd party and drink because it's Monday, you know what I mean? And nobody, like, I'm going to be creative or something. And then he would come home and say, oh, who came over? And so I was like, ah, hide the booze. So I'd walk across the street and throw it away in the beach park, and then I'd go to the little store and I'd fill up the bottle in the freezer. You know what I mean? Like, you got to make sure nobody's upset with your drinking. At this point, I'm drinking on Monday because it's my day off and it's rainy or sunny or whatever, right? Tuesday, I may not have drank, possibly. Wednesday, it's hump day, so, you know, party's on. Thursday is happy hour. Now, I'm legally not allowed to drink in the bars, but it's still happy hour somewhere, so you got to drink. And then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is, you know, everybody parties on the weekends, right? So I legitimately am allowed to party on the weekends, and I'm hanging out with the Navy SEALs, so, I mean, it seems like a good time. I actually told my boss I could not work on Sunday because I belong to a religion where we burn pagan flesh and, you know, celebrate the gods with wine. I don't know. I said something like that. So I mean, like, to the outsider, it might look like my life is really centering around booze. To me, it looked like I was having a good time, right? I didn't see the problem. My life on the outside looks like this. What bikini am I going to wear? What kite am I going to fly? And what tape am I going to put in my Walkman? You know what I mean? Like, those were like, oh, big decisions, right? The other thing that's happening to me is that I'm walking and talking in my sleep. I'm vibrating. I mean, there is no peace in my spirit or soul. Like, I am just like a cat on a hot tin roof once again. You know what I mean? I cannot find any peace. In fact, I was doing a Shakespearean play because, you know, right? That sounds fun. And I woke up in the middle of the night standing above my boyfriend, like, you know, quoting Shakespeare, like the blood of the lamb, you know, and he was all freaked out. So, I mean, I'm like, I'm starting to like, you know, it's going downhill fast. And other people were saying things to me. I mean, some of those Navy people were like, who are drinking pretty heavily, are saying things like, you know, you got to calm down. You got to stop. also what's happening by now is that I've, you know, become a bodybuilder. Again, I'm a, you know, chameleon. So I'm like, what do you want me to be? Right. Who should I be? And so, you know, I went from the skater, the 4-H-er to the skater, to the surfer chick, to the hot chick, to the bodybuilder chick. And I'm, you know, my life is centered around this. Like, if I run faster, I'm running 20 miles a day. I'm going to a Marine-based gym, which was a lot of fun, and working out 2 hours a day. You know what I mean? I'm like, so I'm trying all these things, like, if only. I look good, really good. But, man, the inside is just this, you could blow through me. I mean, there's just gaping hole inside my gut. And I know it, but I can't seem to get a handle on it. I can't figure it out. And these ladies, right, they said, well, we'll take you to this meeting. And it's right across the street from your house. And I my best friend came to visit. I said we were drunk the whole time. She has clarified it. It was not we that were drunk the whole time. It was me. And I don't remember the visit. And she left. And I just remember thinking, God, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't do this anymore. And like, it popped into my head something I had read on those questions. Like, well, if you could just have one, like if you can control your drinking, you're not an alcoholic. Maybe I just like to have a good time. I'm a party girl. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. So I go to the little bar that's in front of our house. I'm 22 by now and can legally drink. And I order beer and then I say, no, wait, let me have a double, right? I mean, if I'm gonna, you know, have one, it might as well be a good one. And I go and I polish off the bottle of Stoli's in the freezer and I drunk call my sister and cry. You know, I'm the drunk sister, right? She didn't even know I was drunk because every time I talked to her, I was drunk, right? I mean, like, that's who I had become. And I woke up the next morning and I was just done. Like, I can't do this anymore. So I waited until 8:05 because you can't go to a meeting drunk, so I thought, and or hungover or whatever. Brought my pet turtle to show them at the meeting. And, you know, because I don't really want to commit. I just want to be checking this out. I'm just going to check it out and see what you guys are doing. And I, you know, I'm tan and thin and blonde. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what you people are going to have to offer me because I've got it going on. And anyways, that for whatever reason, on that one day, they said, tomorrow, the meeting is not here. It is at a hospital. We will come and pick you up. But I don't need that because I got to run 20 miles and work out for 2 hours. So I'm good. And I go in the next morning. I didn't drink. Next morning, I get up. And they must have said that. Don't drink, right? Don't drink. We'll come pick you up. And, you know, I got this. I drop off the boyfriend, and I'm going home. And I make a wrong turn, and I make another wrong turn. I'm on a dirt road, and I'm at the hospital. And I'm asking them where the meeting is, and they say it's right here. And somehow, this is what I remember. This is not what happened. But I remember, like, the doors opened up. Oh, you know, light shining, right? They were there, and they said, like, they said they would. They said they'd be there. They were there. And they said, you know, this is for you. Sit down. And that's when they said, newcomers, that's you. And, man, wouldn't it be great if then I did everything right after that? And then I was, like, super sober and did it all right, but I did not. Anyways, but the meeting was right across the street from my house every other day. And so I started, you know, I'd have to run 10 miles or 20 miles or whatever it was so that I could sit. I literally vibrated. I asked the old guy who'd been sitting there since they bombed Pearl Harbor, sober, like smoking Frank. He just like, you know, just stay sober, kid, you know. And there was the bum. I mean, he really came for the coffee. You know what I mean? He wasn't even there to get sober. He did actually get sober. There was the rich lady who brought her own coffee. You know what I mean? She brought her own chair and her own coffee. There was this guy who was a business person and then like me, right? I mean, and I just was like, nobody here is like me. And then they would start talking, right? And they would talk about, even though that guy was there when they bombed Pearl Harbor, he would say stuff that I understood. Like, he would talk about what it felt like to not want to drink and to drink anyways. He would talk about what it was like and, you know, to have that pit in the, you know, middle of your gut that just doesn't go away. I felt like I had this little light, you know, this little candle, like those candles for our birthdays, right? And it was just inside, it was just about ready to snuff out. You know what I mean? It's just barely alive. And these guys like breathe life into that. That old guy, I really struggled with the concept of a higher power. Now, I have subsequently realized that I've always had a higher power. I had booze. Booze was a higher power for me. I had boys. They were higher powers for me. I've always put stuff in front of a relationship with a true higher power. I just didn't kind of make that connection. And that man, God, he must have been so patient because, again, remember, I'm vibrating. My head is buzzing. I'm vibrating. I'm, you know, probably telling them how to, you know, run the meeting, I'm guessing, the way I was. He brought me out to the, and I'm saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm like changing the words to the Lord's Prayer. I'm like, you know, that kind of person, right? He walked me out to the ocean one day, and I'm like, I don't get this whole higher power thing. I don't get it. I mean, I think, I see the people, you know, that are singing and like, you know, with the tambourines and stuff, and I want what they have. I want that freedom that they seem to have, but I don't want to do what they do. I don't want to give up the life that I currently have that I'm miserable for. I'm not, it doesn't make sense, but that was the fear, right? Maybe it wouldn't work for me was also a fear, right? Clearly it works for you. You're old, but not, you know, for me. And, but this guy, he walked me out to the ocean and he turned me around to the mountains, and the mountains in Hawaii and Alaska are volcanic straight up. And he said, you know, Julie, did you make the mountains? And I said, no. And he said, did you make the trees? Nope. And they turned me to the ocean. He said, what about the ocean? Now, I have been nearly drowned by the ocean. I've been sucked out to sea where I had no power. And he said, what about that? And I got that. I was like, oh, that is a power greater than me. And he said, well, why don't you start there? And that was the very first thing that I heard. Like, I thought it had to be this very specific thing, whatever you told me it had to be, because that's the way I live, is I'm just going to pivot to do what you do or be whatever you think I should be. Anyways, from that moment until now, when we say the prayer at the end, I bend my knees a little bit, because for me, it is this moment that I'm like a moment of humility, right? A moment of like, I get it. Like, this is not, you know, I'm not running the show. Now, I got a sponsor. She was a friend. She knew my boyfriend. I mean, everybody kind of did. I did an inventory with her, and I did not tell her all my sex stuff. I just left it off. Like, it was a little, we had a little fun. You know what I mean? Like, I just, this huge, I don't even know what I said to her, but I left off huge chunks of stuff. Because in my mind is, I didn't want her to, like, think poorly of him. Now I know that I'm going to die. Like, I put myself at risk, right, to die a horrible alcoholic death by not telling her that stuff. So I didn't tell her stuff. And, you know, and about that time, I hook up with some young people, right? I'm going to this meeting, and people, and I'm just, it's not enough. You know what I mean? Everybody's leaving. They go to work. And I'm like, ah, now what do I do? You know, and can run another 10 miles. And some people, like, suggest, why don't you hook up with some people and that are, you know, doing the same thing. So I hook up with a bunch of young people, and we're going to meetings and conferences and dances and, you know, just having a blast in recovery. Like, I didn't know that you could have a blast in recovery, that, you know, I'm going to these meetings where people are like, you know, celebrating birthdays. Like, that is amazing. And I just didn't know that that was available. So like something inside of me is starting to change. Something is starting to happen, and I'm starting to want more. I just don't realize what I've done. About that time, I make amends to my mom. I go and I give her the $100 I stole. You know, we go mountain climbing in Yosemite. It's like super cool. You know, it's just like things are awesome. And I think I'm good now. I mean, I've done the steps, right? I mean, I told somebody some stuff. I made some amends, right? I'm good. But there's something wrong. Like, there's something still like off kilter. And about that time, I start sleeping my way through AA. So sorry about that. Not something I suggest, but because if I don't have a spiritual solution, I will find a solution. And it was a lot of fun, but it caused a lot of havoc. And it is getting pretty crazy now, because I'm coming to meetings and, you know, there's fist fights. And I mean, it's just insane, you know, but I'm not drinking, right? I'm not drinking. So now I know that booze is not the problem. Booze has never been the problem. The problem is me and my relationship with life and the way I show up in the world. I call a friend, a mutual friend, and in a phone booth, that's how long ago it was, and he says, you know, you need a sponsor that you're going to, you need to tell somebody what's going on. Like, you need to get sponsored. So different, the difference between having a sponsor and being sponsored, right? I had a sponsor. She was such a nice lady. I didn't want to bother her. And I did not use a sponsor. I was not sponsored. And it was no fault of her own. So I went to this conference. There was this lady there. I asked her. She said yes. And I wrote out, I started back through the steps. She said, you know, I forgot the part about, you know, that my life is unmanageable. You know, she's like, what's the first step? And she's like, and you just told me a whole bunch of stuff that sounds pretty unmanageable. I mean, she was pretty hardcore. And she was, again, old. She had a family, you know, she was like 30. And I, you know, it's like, but I write out my, by this time, I've taken my husband hostage. You know, and I realize that I need to do something. Otherwise, I'm going to be, it's like I'm circling the drain. You know what I mean? Like, I can feel it. I know it's happening. But, like, in my head, I can't see that that's what's happening. So I ask this lady, I go back through the steps with her, and I write out this sex inventory. That was, like, pretty awesome. And, you know, very detailed. I'm sure it would have made a great read. And, I lost it. I was like, I lost it. I couldn't find it. And then I realized, like, I already know it all. I'm just going to go and tell her what I got to tell her. She says, I'm meeting her at this, like, class that she's taking. And now I'm desperate, right? Before, I'm not going to tell you anything because I want to look good. Now I'm going to tell anybody anything because I'm going to die if I don't. And so we go to this ceramics class, and I'm like, so the first person, she's like, whoa, 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 we're going to my house. Like, you know, you don't need to tell these people this stuff. And I tell her this stuff, and she says, you know, she apparently had been a Vegas showgirl in her previous life and had lots of experiences. So I would say something, and she would laugh and say, oh, I got paid for that. Oh, you know, like, and I just, I know you can get paid for it. But anyways, I mean, it just took, you know, that the stuff, right? It was like pus and ooze and, you know, gunking up my spirit, and it just took it all out and cleaned it all up and, you know, made it so that I could then move forward in my program, in my life. I met my husband. We decided to move back to Alaska. I had gone to Alaska, traveled around, because that's, you know, sounded like a good idea when I was like 30 or 60 days. Well, I'm going to go to Alaska by myself. And so I did that for a while and got hurt and came back. So I met him and we moved to Alaska. And, you know, at this point, I'm in, like, the AA brat pack. We are, like, going to meetings and coffee. You know, I mean, it's like we're, you know, we've got meetings that we're doing and, you know, thing. You know, at every meeting we have a job and, you know, big book thumpers. You know, our cars have, like, AA symbols on them. You know what I mean? Like, we are, like, you know, it's just awesome. We got pulled over one time, full car. You know, cop says, like, you know, you kids been drinking? And we're all, like, 90 days, 60 days. You know, like, we're all excited. Our driver did have a warrant, so he got arrested, but... We all bailed him out. It was just, like, so cool. And we moved to Ketchikan, Alaska. Ketchikan, Alaska has 32 miles of road. It is not an island. It's a landlocked island. And when the fog rolls in, it is like an island. And Brian had quite the history there, so a lot of people knew about him. And a lot of people knew that I was coming. So it was very uncomfortable when we got there. And the AA just wasn't what I was used to, right? I'm sure it was perfectly fine, but I'm in there like, I'm an AA cheerleader. You know what I mean? I am like, I'm on fire now with this thing. I want just everybody to feel the way I feel. I cannot believe that this is the life that we get to have. And that was not the experience I had there. Then we moved to Seward. In Seward, Alaska, it's in the Resurrection Bay, incredibly beautiful place. But there were five people sober, and Brian and I were two of them. And, you know, it was rough. It was rough there, you know, and I'm tending bar and waitressing and stuff. And I'm good. I'm like the desire to drink has been lifted. Now I should say, I forgot an important part of my story, which is I do say that I haven't had a drink or a drug. And that is because, when I was brand new sober, right before I came to Alaska, I was bragging to my friends about how I don't drink. I was in Los Gatos, California, or Santa Cruz, California, and telling them how I don't drink. And then we got in the car, and for a long time I told the story that they lit up, but really the story is really that I was like, let's do that. And I took two hits of some green leafy stuff, and I had this feeling, this experience that a flashlight that had been shining on my head was turned off. I mean, that's the only way that I can explain it. I've been going to meetings. People were talking about conscious contact, blah, blah, blah. I don't understand what you're saying. But let me tell you, I knew when it was gone. Like the minute it was gone, I just felt that terribly alone again. I was like right back into that place where I'm standing in the party. Everybody's staring at me. I'm like fabulous. And like, and I'm separated again, separated from you, separated from God. And I said, I lost my conscious contact. They were like, let's turn on the lights. I was like, no, I got to go. So now I know that I can't drink or drug. It took me a while to tell that story, but I did change my sobriety date because that's very important to me that I have not had a drink or a drug, that I'm clean and sober. Anyways, we're in Ketchikan, we're in Seward. You know, life is good, but life is lifey, right? We start having kids, we move up, you know, to Anchorage. We've lived in Ketchikan, Seward, Anchorage, Eagle River, which was kind of out farther, and then now we live in Palmer, which is, you know, 50 miles north of Anchorage, so we've moved farther north. You know, my life is busy. I got three kids. I got a lot of really nice cars. I've got really nice furniture. I think at this point I'm going to school, I'm working, I'm, you know, being the homeroom mom. I'm like, you know, juggling, right? I'm good. And I'm still kind of going to AA, but I mean, they swear sometimes and the poor little angels can't hear that. And our kids have never seen us drunk, but they have seen me be alcoholic, right? And about this time, I call it the dark times. Brian's being an alcoholic and not in recovery. And I call it the dark times because I am trying to manage and control another person. And my kids have homemade goddamn Play-Doh. You know what I mean? My house is effing clean, right? I mean, like, we're going to church, but it is not fixing what is going on. And I'm still kind of dabbling in AA when I can, but I mean, I'm busy. Life is, you know, right? I'm busy. And about that time, series of circumstances, I end up going to a meeting a woman. I hear her say, I'm married to a jerk who's also sober. And I'm like, oh my God, we could talk. So I go up and talk to her and she says something like, well, call me tomorrow at 8. And I was like, I mean, at this point I have 13 or 15 years or something like that. And I'm thinking, who the heck are you? I did not ask for your help. I am not. You could be a nurse with a tourniquet. My arm could be cut off, spurting blood, and I'm fine. Like, that is how I show up in the world. I do not need your help. But the next morning I woke up, I was plotting his murder, and I thought, I mean, murder, call this lady. So I called this lady, and she, you know, she did the same thing that we always do, right? She walked me right back through the steps. Now, I will say that in that time, there had been many women who had reached out their hand to me, many women who had said, you know, come to this meeting, come work these steps with us, come, you know, we had, you know, cancer scares and, you know, good things happen and bad things happen and, you know, all this stuff. And there were always people in Alcoholics Anonymous who just kept reaching their hand up. Thank God you don't give up on us. Thank God you don't give up on us. This lady walked me back through the steps when my youngest was like 2, sitting on my lap. And she said things like, you know, you got to go back to meetings. And I just couldn't figure it out. I'm like, I can't, you know, do all this stuff you're asking me to do. And she said, then I don't know why you're talking to me, because, you know, if you want what I have, do what I do. And I wanted what she had. And what she had was not a lot of stuff. What she had was this sense of peace, right? This sense of a center, right, about her. And I did not have that. I might have had a lot of stuff, but I did not have that sense of ease and comfort. And I knew that if I didn't do something different, I was going to find ease and comfort in something else. I bought a lot of cars. I bought a lot of stuff. I'd done a lot of things to make myself feel better. And, you know, it was going to happen again. And I just, it's like I knew it. I intuitively knew. So I started changing, right? I started doing the stuff that she told me to do. And, you know, at some point, we got to, you know, start this group, Palmer Foxhall. And part of starting that group was that there was no group in our area that was enthusiastic about recovery, that was, that had, you know, childcare. We invite families and kids to come, and we had kids, and lots of people had kids. And it's hard for, I'll say women, but obviously men too, right? Like, what do you do when you've got this family and you want to recover? you know, bring them along, right? And so we had this place where we started welcoming that in our neighborhood, in our town. And, you know, it's kind of taken off, and that's been super good. I tell you that, you know, as I've gone through this process, that woman has been my sponsor for well over 20 years, 23 years. And at one point she called me. She was having trouble. She was married, and the relationship was going south. And she was told she had to call me and tell me that things were not working out. And I thought, well, I guess you can't be my, this, I didn't say this, but I thought, I guess you can't be my sponsor then. Because I thought, like, you, part of me thought you had to be perfect, I guess, to be my sponsor. And when I heard that in my head, I thought, well, good luck. I guess I never get to sponsor anybody then. Anyways, we all worked through it, and it was great. So she got to stay as my sponsor. But I just, things like that that I didn't know, I things that happened that I, you know, that came, understandings, I guess I'll have. There was a point that my mom, now, I had made amends. I'd made proper amends. I'd made the amends like, sorry, mom, here's $100, right? But then I'd made real amends to my mom, which was the life amends, right? And my sister. My sister had had some things happen in her life that were horrible and tragic. And I was the sister that, I mean, I'm her only sister, but she called me, right? And I got to go and be there for her when she needed me. And like, I was the drunk sister. So she could never count on me before that. And I got to go and be there for her. So make that living amends and make that right. My mom and our family just really grew and bonded. And we all, you know, my mom was in AA and Al-Anon. And we kind of, I mean, she's been to our home group. Anyway, so my mom got sick. And when she called to tell me, I heard myself think, if my mom dies, then I'm going to have to totally rely on God. And if you had asked me, I would have said, no, me and God are like this. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm doing all this stuff. I'm in the middle of AA, and I am, like, connected. But there was part of me, and I don't, that just held out this, like, connection, like, that my mom, like, God blows it, right? I'll call mom. And I don't think God killed my mom so that I'd have to learn how to totally rely on him, but there, something happened to me where I had this experience where I had to learn that, you know, and as she was leaving us, you know, I had this experience where I realized, like, what do you have? Because I was pretty upset she was going to leave us. And she was a spectacular person. And I realized that what I have is today, right? That's all I have is today. And if I want to make a connection, it's today. It's not yesterday, and it's not tomorrow. So I got to do that and be there. When she passed, she was not worried about me at all because she knew I had you, right? And her one concern was that, you know, my sister and I stay connected because it was the three, we were like the three amigos. And, you know, my sister and I have stayed connected. My sister comes up to, we have a bunch of conferences up in Alaska, which I invite you all to. We have a women's we call it an advance because we advance into our recovery. It doesn't come from me. It comes from somebody else. And then the men have a conference that they do. But we've had those. And, you know, my sister comes pretty regularly, and we go to these conferences together, and we get to share this family recovery, right? Our kids, we have three daughters, and so far, I don't know, money's out on one of them. But so far, you know, in fact, one of them, when she was kind of going through something, you know, I kind of recognized that I can't help her. Like, I'm not the person I can, you know, to help her. But I know who can. And so I made sure she had some numbers of some of the younger ladies in our group just in case, because I knew that she could reach out to them even if she couldn't talk to me about what was going on. Our youngest daughter is a superstar at everything. And she was being a superstar at everything and then got sick. And everything changed because, like, life is super good. I'm in the middle of AA. I am, you know, sponsoring people. I am sponsored. I have a home group. I'm active in that home group. I have a job. I mean, I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do. And then this happens. And, you know, I got to walk through that with her and, you know, learn about even new character defects, right? I had a resentment against a sick person for being sick, which tells me that I'm kind of broken, right? I have some serious character flaws and that I can't fix them. I can't, but I can give them to God and I can watch for them, right? I go through this process. I've made amends. I've started this, you know, where I'm starting to connect more and more with this higher power and try to be the person, right, that I think God wants me to be. Now, when I was a kid, I think I mentioned that I would tell off teachers and principals pretty regularly. Part of my fun, if you will, was I would make my fifth grade teacher cry regularly, like every day. And at the end of the year, she had this like problem solving sheet. It was way bigger than that. And she, you know, this big pile, and she kind of tried to shame me into like, you know, like you were the worst. And I thought like, I won, you know what I mean? Like that's how I showed up in the world. And so I went back to school and I'm a fifth grade teacher. It's just kind of making it right in the universe, I guess. But and it's funny because, you know, they don't even try to make me cry because it's like hilarious, right? You know, it's like, oh, flip your hair like this, you know. But here's the thing that's super cool. This program is absolutely life-saving for alcoholics. But it is something that the message that we carry, we can carry into our lives, right? As our 12th step talks about carrying it into every aspect of our lives. And I can tell you that there are an awful lot of kids that, you know, need a 12-step program. And I regularly talk about how to make amends with, you know, and you haven't lived until you've made an amends to like a 10-year-old. You're like, I was wrong for, you know, and they're looking at you like, what are you saying? Nobody's ever said this to me. And I'm like, yep, but I'm going to. Because if I don't, I'm going to die. I'm going to die if I don't live this life. So we have this home group. It's pretty enthusiastic. We meet on Mondays, and we have a speaker meeting on Mondays. So we hope you come. And then on Thursdays, we have a big book podium call-up. We have treatment centers that come, and you know there was a time when they didn't come. Now treatment centers are kind of like a little more active, but for a long time, you know, we drove a van out to get the people and bring them to the meeting because that's what it says to do in our literature. Now they come to us, and we get a little lazy, and so it's a little bit harder to kind of make sure that we're stepping up and doing the things that we need to do. We used to take meetings into the jails and institutions or the jails, but then COVID happened and they stopped allowing us to do that, right? And so it's like carrying the message to the people that, to our people, right, is so vitally important to somebody did it for me. I sponsored a gal who was on the streets of Seattle, bad, bad drunk, and she got sober. And life got really good, and she got, you know, the doctor and the kid and the house, you know what I mean? And she told me, she came to a meeting one day, and she said, I don't need AA anymore. And I said, well, what if AA needs you? Like, what if that lady who pulled you out of the gutter went and got her nails done that day, right? And she didn't believe me, and, you know, she had a different experience. So I know that because I've had the experience where I did not live my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the experience where I've lived my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it becomes, hopefully, who we are. And, you know, when I'm in that full circle and triangle, right, when I'm service, unity, and recovery, when I'm participating in the fellowship, and I'm participating in sponsorship and service and all of those things, and I'm continuing to work the steps, which is an ongoing thing for me. It's not a one-and-done thing. There's always, like, more to learn because our book says grasping and developing, right, in our preamble, and I always think about that because it's like, in the beginning, I was really grasping. I was trying to, like, what are you people talking about? And sometimes I still am grasping, to be honest, but, you know, I want to keep developing that. I want to keep developing and continue to grow. I thank you so much for asking me to be here. I'm so honored. I want to say that, you know, when I looked through that book, there were definitely some names that I recognized, but what really touched me is that all those people who came before us, that old man who sat by the tree and smoked nonstop, was so patient and so kind. And in fact, when I came back some years later, he said, "You're still sober?" And I thought I had it going on, but... you know, if it wasn't for those who come before us, like, I know for a fact I wouldn't be here. And, you know, I guess in our home group, we say stay. We just ask people to stay. If you need to go out and do whatever you need to do, that's fine. But if you can just stay, hold on to your seat, like your life depends on it, then you will have a life second to none. Things that you can't even imagine, a life that you can't even imagine, will unfold in front of you, in spite of you. So thank you.
Man, that was amazing. Okay, I would like to thank Julie and hope that she comes back again and again and again. I would also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. Hold on, we're closing up. Okay, now we'll close in the usual manner with our speaker's choice to take us out.